Daniel chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the princes, the governors and captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried aloud, To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whoso falleth not down and worships not, and whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Therefore at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Judeans. They spake and said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falls not down and worships, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Judeans whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. End of verse 13.
Okay, I mean, I would like to read a little bit more before I comment at length on this. For real.
Yeah, I'll do that. Verse 14. Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said unto them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if you be ready that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well, but if you worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 17 times more than it wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Should I stop there?
Yeah.
Just do the whole chapter.
Yeah, you know, now we could discuss this. That there's okay. Two episodes here in Daniel, and I believe the other one, wow, let me find it. Nope, I think I just crashed my Bible Works. I'm sorry. There's this, and there's the lion's pit.
Microphone muted.
And I've never really gotten a chance yet to look into this. But Comparé, in a sermon called Daniel Freed from the Critic's Den, kind of like a play on the lion's den, right? He had written about this archaeologist, Marcel Dieulafoy, who excavated Babylon and actually found the fiery furnace and the lion's cage at the bottom of a pit where men were evidently punished for various crimes or offenses to the realm or to the king. He said that Planedora is 6 miles south of Babylon. I haven't checked that out. I haven't had the chance. If I ever do a Daniel commentary, I would examine all of this and research it. I haven't had that opportunity yet. So he's claiming that these things were actually found, and he names the archaeologist that found the cage and the pit with the lions. He doesn't name the archaeologist that found, not in the way the sermon's written, that found the fiery pit, but he mentions that here also, that this was actually found in archaeology. It's something that I haven't had a chance to substantiate.
Is it possible that so-called archaeologist might be another guy, like the one who found the Ark of the Covenant? Another fraudulent guy, because it feels sort of convenient that he finds both these things at once.
Yeah, you know, Ron Wyatt only sought headlines. There are no academic papers, that there are no archaeological surveys. I mean, I've read archaeological journals for years. I don't agree with all the conclusions of the archaeologists, of course. But even if you read James Breasted, Leonard Woolley excavated a lot of Babylon in the 1920s, and he excavated a lot in Egypt. It takes years to publish their findings sometimes. Sometimes their findings never get published, simply because the archaeologist doesn't outlive or live long enough to make the publication. But and there's always criticism of the field for that reason, of the field of archaeology for that reason. And it takes so long sometimes to publish a study about an excavation, like 5, 10, 15 years sometimes. Wow. So once you see these studies, you'll see that they're well constructed. They take all kinds of photographs in context of things that they've discovered, that they'll use yardsticks so that you can get an idea in the photograph of how big things are and things like that. And they do detailed sketches of all the artifacts they find. I mean, it's really painstaking, and everything's well documented. Well, Ron Wyatt never did any of that. He never attempted to emulate a real archaeologist and present his findings in a professional manner. He just sought headlines and sensationalism, and he was really unschooled and didn't find the things that he thought he did. Even his chariot wheel was a Roman era chariot wheel. It wasn't an ancient chariot wheel. And why wouldn't there be tons of chariot wheels in the Red Sea? There were probably ships crashing there for centuries.
Right.
That held chariots. So yeah, I don't. Ron Wyatt, in my opinion, was basically a clown. His conclusions were incredible, and they were incredible compared to scripture. The whole blood on the mercy seat thing is just
It's far fetched.
It's extremely far fetched, and it's a lie.
Yeah. So these men, or this man that Comperet, you said, mentioned in a paper, so these were respected men?
Yeah, Marcel Dieulafoy was actually an archaeologist, right? A French archaeologist. Noted for his excavations at Susa, which is the ancient capital of Persia in modern Iran. I'm just doing a surface Google search for him. He was a French archaeologist and civil engineer. And he wasn't a Jew. Where is that going for him?
Yeah, well, if he did find some fragment or evidence or ruins or remains of this furnace or something in relation to the lions, that would be great.
According to Comperet, it was actually even an inscription on the furnace. Okay.
Wow.
This is a place of burning where men who blaspheme the gods of Chaldea die by fire, which is...
That's pretty on the nose.
I'll put the link to the sermon in here, and you can take it for what it's worth, because I have not had a chance to verify this information, but it's on the Comperet site of Christogenier. It's Daniel Freed from the Critic's Den. Marcel Dieulafoy, when excavating Babylon, fell into a pit which first appeared to be an ancient dry well. However, it was found to be one of the open cages for lions in the zoological gardens. At the curb was the inscription, the place of execution where men who angered the king died, torn by wild beasts. And he's saying that a list of 484 men of high standing was found that were executed in this fashion. Of course, Daniel wasn't among them because he came out alive. That's the lion's den, though. That's not the pit of fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's Comperet, and this has been in the back of my mind for a long time.
It would be a great study to do, because just as the essay is titled, Daniel is criticized a lot and really unfairly.
Right.
So whenever we have more, that's great. And this furnace is pretty amazing that it kills men who get near it. That's how hot it is.
Yeah, that almost seems a little far-fetched, because I've been near some pretty big furnaces in my life, but...
Doesn't it say in a few verses?
I'm sorry?
Doesn't it say in a few verses that, like, these men go near the furnace and it kills them?
Oh, I understand that. It's just an amazing thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
And BibleWorks keeps crashing on me, so I can't microphone look anything activated. Up.
It may have had to do with the construction of it, though.
Like, yeah, it may have.
Yeah, maybe it was chaotic. Spouting out flames all the time.
Not ventilated as we would expect a furnace to be ventilated.
Right. But still have oxygen coming into it, but not... Like, I this may sound silly, but I remember one time we actually bought a barbecue that you could cook a steak on. Like a portable little $20 barbecue with using newspaper as fuel because of the way it was shaped. Like, I was on a road trip and my friend said, this is crazy, this will never work. And sure enough, it got hot enough to cook a thick steak really on newspaper because of its shape.
So the Babylonians probably didn't have OSHA.
They're right. What a pain in the ass OSHA is. I worked for a company. I had to deal with them. In the 80s, they were bad then.
Should I finish off the chapter? I was sort of finding it hard to figure out where to divide it because just the way the chapter is organized.
Yeah, so I'm trying to make my way back to Daniel. I'm sorry. BibleWorks crashed on me twice.
It's all right.
Which verse do we leave off at?
21. Or 20. I stopped at 20.
I don't know if there's really anything we should talk about here. I mean, this golden image that's 60 cubits high, that's like 90 feet. And 6 cubits wide, that's like 9 feet. Sounds almost like a golden pillar or a tall golden idol. Standing idol.
And this takes place after the dream, right? Because these men are princes in Babylon.
Yes, it must take place after the dream.
So maybe the dream is sort of...
And these men are established. They've been in their offices. It seems for a while the tone of the statement concerning these men at the beginning of this chapter.
So perhaps we could conjecture that the dream and its interpretation got to Nebuchadnezzar's head. And he thinks he's all high and mighty now.
I mean, that's a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't make it a doctrine, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's a conjecture.
And he forgot the God of Daniel that interpreted that dream for him, right?
Yeah. He seems to flip a lot throughout the book of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar?
Yeah. Yes, he does. I would agree with that.
Anyway, should I finish off the chapter?
Sure.
All right. Verse 21. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste, and spoke and said unto his counselors, Did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, True, O king. He answered and said, Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and spoke and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. End of chapter 3.
I don't know how they could have been promoted any higher than what they were already doing. That's all right. That the episodes in chapters 3 and 4 are not dated, like in the fifth year of the Book of Nezar, maybe, or in the fourth or whatever. They're not. Chapters 1 and 2 are. I mean, that doesn't discredit them, but it makes it more difficult to get a more precise timeline on Daniel, right? Daniel is not mentioned in Daniel chapter 3. I don't know if anybody noticed that or not, but Daniel is not included in this narrative in Daniel chapter 3 at all. So whoever was trying to set up these Hebrews that are in the court of Nebuchadnezzar, whoever tattled on him didn't tattle on Daniel, or Daniel's maybe not even there. Maybe he was sent off somewhere to do something, or maybe he was on vacation in the Dead Sea or something. He's not mentioned in Daniel chapter 3. That doesn't discredit the chapter either. It's just that he's not mentioned there. Daniel appears again in chapter 4, verse 8. The Book of Nezar is having another dream. This is the chapter with the Book of Nezar's madness, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think it is.
Since it says he promoted them at the end, could that possibly suggest that it's before the dream of chapter 2?
I'm sorry, it looks like chapter 5 is Nebuchadnezzar's madness. Do you think that this is before chapter 2? No. It's not until chapter 2, I don't think, that they were given those offices, or was that chapter 1?
Right.
But let me see. I think that was chapter 2.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking at the very beginning. I'm just wondering, maybe this promotion here signifies something.
Yeah, they had their offices at the very beginning in chapter 1.
Okay.
I don't really think Daniel chapter 3 could have taken place before chapter 2. That's my opinion. I mean, chapter 2 is in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar, and chapter 3 isn't dated. Chapter 1 is in the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, I gather.
Now, I know the church really twists this, and they try to say that Christ is in the furnace with them, but we know that Christ isn't the only begotten, right? He's the most beloved. So the Son of God could, since the angels look like Adam, ostensibly, and since Nebuchadnezzar in verse 28 says angel, then I guess this figure in the furnace is most likely a messenger.
You know, I'm looking at the Hebrew, and the fourth is like the Son of God.
Microphone muted.
And there's no definite article on the Son.
It's not the Son of God in the Hebrew.
I don't even see a word for son in the Hebrew.
Oh.
The fourth. There's a word for fourth that has an Aramaic article suffix, the fourth, like four. A particle meaning two, four in regard to a son, and that's the word bar, it's not ben, it's bar, of God. There's no article, there's no definite article before son, so it's a son of God, it's not the son of God. And that's basically a King James Version commentary, right?
Yeah, I feel like they did that on purpose.
I mean, there's a point where a translation, if you continually depart from the original language, a translation can become a commentary.
Yeah.
If you look in the New American Standard Bible, it says the fourth is like a son of the gods.
And considering the KJV,
yes, it is the gods, yes, because it's not God. It's I'm looking at the form of that word. It's Elah, which is a plural Aramaic form of the word El, Elah.
So it's basically an Anglican commentary.
Yes.
And they're being pretty dishonest, too, because they didn't put it in italics.
Would be more honest because the words are being spoken by Babylonians.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, well, that's the King James Version for you.
Yeah, that's pretty deceitful.
Yes, it is deceitful.
Like, how do they have a clean conscience?
And you'll have these evangelical Judeo-tards saying, you see this? Jesus is in the Old Testament.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, or they don't believe the King James Version. It's sacred scripture to them.
Yeah, they don't investigate it.
No. But it is. It's us, son of the gods.
And then they'll get Paul completely wrong in Hebrews, and they'll think that the Melchizedek who comes to Abraham is literally Christ. Right.
Right.
So, wow. Wow. Okay. Well, it's not the first time they haven't put it in italics.
No, and they even pick and choose when to do that, and that ends up being a commentary also.
I can't condemn them, and I won't, but I just can't understand how these people just do that. And they're like, oh, it's okay. Maybe if the KJV came with, like, notes or something, they would explain themselves.
Yeah, the King James Version, I'll tell you what it came with. A bunch of fucking rabbis leaning over their shoulders telling them what to write.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed in one of my Bibles, it's a King James, that in Haggai, where it says the desire of all nations, they capitalized it as if it's a person. And I know that that's a lie which Martin Luther inherited from Jews, right? Like, wow. Yeah. They capitalized it.
Yeah, well, they were all learned in those Jewish Bible commentaries.
Yeah.
Especially in the Old Testament. Why would the Babylonians proclaim anything about the Son of God?
Right.
And at that time, why would even a Hebrew do that?
So it's ostensibly a messenger.
Well, I mean, they're picturing him in that idealized way and describing him as one of those bright, shining angels that we see mentioned elsewhere in scripture. Yes, it's just an angel. Regardless of what the angel truly was or what the angel represented to the three men, it was supposed to make an impression upon the Babylonians.
Right.
Who would have thought that their God was with them, right? The impression is for the sake of the Babylonians. Just like Jonah was a dove that came out of a whale or a fish. And that equated Jonah to their Semiramis myth.
Yeah, that was a testament to the Ninevites.
Yes.
This is the sort of thing which made the gospel spread so quickly. Signs and wonders.
Right, because that's what people evidently need to believe anything. Like Tyler wants to know why niggers are getting healed and he's not.
Right.
He's rolling off. Repentant answered him in the chat.
Microphone
David.
Activated.
Yeah, I saw that.
Actually went to do it when we were just bantering and thought it was done. I might add a couple of cents later, tomorrow maybe.
Should I go on to chapter 4?
I don't know why not.
Chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God has wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore made I a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. Then came in the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans,
microphone
and the soothsayers,
muted.
And I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubles thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. Thus were the visions of my head in my bed. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, hew down the tree and cut off his branches, shake off his leaves and scatter his fruit. Let the beasts get away from under it and the fowls from his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will and sets up over it the beast of the basest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof. For as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. End of verse 18.
Now, all of this is, I would never make any doctrine based on all of this. It's all the words of Nebuchadnezzar, right? He's a pagan, right? It's a pagan perspective. Daniel is going to speak to Nebuchadnezzar on his own terms, but that doesn't mean that what Nebuchadnezzar said represents truth. That's all I have to say about that. I mean, the interpretation from Daniel is more important than the book of Nezar's explanation of the dream.
Yeah, of course. I'll continue then. Verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to your enemies. The tree that thou saw, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation, it is you, O king, that has grown and become strong. For your greatness is grown and reaches unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And whereas the king saw a watcher and a holy one coming down from heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast of the field, till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which is to come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. End of verse 27.
So he was the tree, Nebuchadnezzar was the tree that was going to be cut down, but the stump would stay, representing his rule over his kingdom. This is the time of Nebuchadnezzar's madness, and we're going to encounter that next. That seven times, a lot of people, Clifton included, and it seemed plausible to myself that this is a, it's like most other words of the prophets, it's a dual prophecy with a short-term fulfillment and a long-term fulfillment, and that seven times represents 2160 years or whatever it comes out to. I forget, it's more than that. I'm sorry, I'm having a brain fart. 1280, 2560 years of this binding of the Babylonian kingdom, which would represent what we call Mystery Babylon today. But it's already been longer than 2560 years since this prophecy. So I'm not going to attempt to interpret that. I haven't even tried to work out the math since Clifton had done it 15 years ago, probably about 15 years ago now, maybe closer to 20. And he came up with like 1980, I believe, or some year around there. Well, Mystery Babylon's still here, right? So it must mean something else if there's a long-term fulfillment, which I believe there is. This prophecy had to be given before 585 BC. If we're still in the second year of the Book of Nezar, and that's 603 BC, perhaps 602 or something right around there, then we want 2560 seven times minus 602. It might be 2520 is seven times. That brings you to like 1958, right? Which is not exactly a signal year in our history. Right, 2520, 2520 years is seven times. Minus 602 BC, which is the last year mentioned, or 603 BC, which is the last year mentioned in Daniel. And yeah, that brings you not even to 1960, so. It seems that this prophecy, if you want to interpret it in that manner, came and went. Clifton tried to push the date of the prophecy up, and I don't think it's fair to do that. I really don't. But when this happened within the Book of Nezar's realm, I don't think we could really know. In Daniel chapter 5, it's Belshazzar he's not the king yet, but he's co-regent with his father Nabonidus, right? So Belshazzar he's the ruler of Babylon in Daniel chapter 5. In Daniel chapter 6, it's Darius. In Daniel chapter 7, it's Belshazzar. The chapters are out of order in Daniel chapter 8, it's Belshazzar. In Daniel chapter 9 and forward, it's Darius and the Persians. So Nebuchadnezzar ruled Babylon, I think, for about 62 years or something like that. So let me get a grip on that. Nebuchadnezzar II died in 562 BC. So 2520 minus 562 takes you to 1940 AD. From 562 to 1940 AD. That ain't right. I may have screwed something up. 2520 minus 562. 1960 AD. No, 1958, I think. Do this again. 1958. So this 2,520 years, if it's interpreted in that manner, even from the time Nebuchadnezzar's death, only takes you to 1958, but Nebuchadnezzar is not dead yet. He's going to live at least 7 more years, right? He's going to come have his 7 years of madness and come back and continue to rule Babylon for at least a while. This seems to have happened earlier in his rule. We don't know when it happened in his rule. I don't think there's anything that corroborates these 7 years in any inscriptions or in the history of Nebuchadnezzar, which I would like to study more deeply if I ever have that opportunity. So when this 2,520 years begins and ends, we don't know exactly, but it should have been over no later than 1960, 1958. And actually earlier than that, because this prophecy had to happen sooner than 562 BC. It had to begin sooner than that, these 7 times. I believe Clifton tried to start the 7 times at the time that the Persians came to the empire, at the time that the Persians conquered Babylon. And that's how he ends up at 1980 or 1990 or something like that. And that's just kind of conjecturing. It's conjecture. So that's all I could really say about that 7 times prophecy in Daniel 4:23. I'm sure it has a significance, but I'm not sure we could really figure out what it is yet.
Is it necessarily saying, though, that something really explicit and major and astute will happen at the end of that 7 times? Or no, is it just, it's just saying, right, like they're putting a band on this stump and they're keeping the moisture in so that the tree will resprout sometime in the future. And if that interpretation would be correct, that that tree resprouting represents Mystery Babylon, then it could just represent a time where Babylon really starts to come in full force, right? And
yeah,
I know Babylon's older than the last, you know, the 20th century. It was probably started more so in the late 1800s, or if you can't even really date that, I suppose, but it really did.
Right.
Sorry.
No, that makes the most sense. Your interpretation is fine, and it's better than Clifton's interpretation. And let me, because Clifton thought the Babylonian system would last for 2,520 years. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, you know, that series of empires put together with the papacy, and that's fine, but it's not what the prophecy is actually saying, right? And you're right, it's really saying that the stump is going to rebloom at the end of 7 times or 7 years. But even that didn't happen, as you point out, in 1960. That started happening with the French Revolution.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was about to get to. I was about to say that the French Revolution. But maybe it could represent like when it really starts to accelerate, you know, and it did accelerate a lot in the 20th century. But
right. But you can't count 2,520 years back from the French Revolution and end up at Mézard.
Right, you can't.
And even at its earliest, if this happened in 602 BC, the best date you could come up with for 2,520 years from then is like 1920, right? Or thereabouts.
Which would be like the Federal Reserve, I guess, if you were trying to find something.
It's kind of close to the Federal Reserve, but it's closer to the, it's like the end of World War II, 1918.
Yeah.
World War One.
Let me see, 1918 plus 602 is 2520. Yes. If this is 602, this seems to be a little later. So the 2520 years can't be fulfilled until at least 1918 and probably a little later. And we don't know because we don't know what year this is. And there's a 30 year spread here. Let's call it a 30 year spread, right? I mean, there had to be over 7 years left before 562 BC when this happened. So it happened sometime between 602 BC and 7 years before 560 to 570 BC, back up a few years from then. That 30-year spread is in the first three decades of the 6th century BC. This had to happen, but we don't know. We don't know when because it's not dated in Daniel. And this is the last chapter with Nebuchadnezzar in it.
Hmm.
I thought it was something else in Daniel chapter 4 that I wanted to discuss that maybe I missed. The king spake and said, is this not great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? So here in Daniel chapter 4, verse 30, the book of Nezar is portrayed as claiming to have built Babylon. And this, to me, it helps vindicate Daniel. Because the Greeks, all the Greek Hellenistic writers and later historians, and even back to the classical period and the time of Herodotus, they all believed that Semiramis built Babylon. But in Daniel, it says Nebuchadnezzar built Babylon. And when Babylon was excavated, bricks were uncovered with Nebuchadnezzar's name inscribed in the bricks, which proves that he built at least a portion of Babylon, and that this claim is true here. So at least a significant portion of Babylon, I should say, and it helps prove that this claim is true in Daniel 4:30, where Hellenistic writers and Greeks especially believe that Semiramis built Babylon. And Herodotus states that explicitly, and so do the others. Diodorus Siculus, maybe Strabo, I don't really remember. So this is something that Daniel knew that the later Hellenistic period writers did not know, which helps to me establish the truth that Daniel wrote during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar and not during the Hellenistic period, as many of his Jewish critics try to claim. With each ushering in of a new empire, much of the history of the old empire was swept under the table. I mean, that's true from the transition from the Assyrians to the Babylonians to the Persians. That's certainly true.
We even see that in the transition of certain rulers, like the pharaohs in Egypt, right?
Yes, that they purposely sought to obliterate the names of their predecessors whom they didn't like, or that weren't a part of their own dynasty, or that they were competitors with. Ramses did that explicitly. That's actually written for him. But there were others who did it.
Shall I finish off the chapter?
Why not?
Verse 28. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spoke and said, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomsoever he will." The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that lives forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, "What doeth you?" At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and brightness returned unto me. And my counselors and my lords sought unto me. And I was established in my kingdom. And excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. End of Daniel chapter 4.
And that's the last we know of Nebuchadnezzar in the prophets and historical books of scripture. He disappears right here. He's done. Even though he may have lived for 30 years after this. This chapter, it's interesting that this comes right after the chapter in chapter 3, the incident where he had built that huge idol that he expected everybody to worship. Which lends credence to what you had said, Noble, about him getting a big head and a big ego after the prophecy in Daniel chapter 2. So then he wants everybody to worship his image, and then this happens to him, and he's humbled.
Yeah, we even see in verse 37 that that's what he's learned from this.
Yes.
I find
that
sort of
seems to intertwine. Chapters 2, 3, and 4 seem to intertwine very well.
Right, yeah. I agree. I find it sort of funny how for 7 years he's mad and he's eating grass and his nails are as long as claws. And then at the end of the 7 years, they're just happy to bring him back in and give him rulership over the kingdom. Like, you would think maybe his reputation would have been damaged during those 7 years, or they just wouldn't want him back or something, but it seems they're actually excited to have him back.
Right, but now there's a huge gap in Daniel. It might be a 30-year gap. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know. Oh, okay. The Book of Nezar came to rule, I think, in 605 BC, give or take a year. And he ruled until 562 BC when he supposedly died. And these dates are pretty much certain to a degree from the Babylonian inscriptions that have survived. So that's a long time. I mean, he ruled over 40 years, except for these seven, right? Well, anyway, he ruled over 40 years, and Nabonidus was one of his courtiers, one of his court members, and he was kind of old, and spent a lot of his reign in the fields, generaling his troops, especially against the Persians and the Medes. And his son Belshazzar, who we see next in Daniel chapter 5, his son was born in, according to the what Wikipedia has, in 580 BC. So he was still kind of young when the Book of Nezar died in 562. But he was well into adulthood when he was ruling Babylon in the later reign of his father. Now, his father became the king of Babylon about 6 or 7 years after Nebuchadnezzar had died. There were a couple of minor kings, and it's speculated that Nabonidus was married to a daughter of Nebuchadnezzar too. I don't know what that speculation is based on. But Nabonidus is off fighting the Persians and the Medes, and Belshazzar is back in Babylon, acting as a co-regent to his much older father, and basically partying it up. That's how it seems to me in Daniel, that he's having a good old time in Babylon while his father's off defending the kingdom. That's what it seems to be to me. So I guess we'll see that. We'll take off with that next week when we do Daniel chapter 5. Chapters 5 and 6 are both Belshazzar. I think that's where we'll find the lion's den. We have to find it in those chapters, I believe. Yes, in Daniel chapter 7? No. Maybe I have this story confounded. How to find that?
Apparently, it's chapter 6. Six, verse 16.
Yeah, I don't know why I can't find it. Yeah, 6:16. Okay. It has to be because after chapter 7, it's Persians, right? So I knew it had to be 5 or 6, but I couldn't find it. Thank you. I must have mistyped. because Bible Works failed me, or I failed Bible Works, one or the other. I think I was looking for Lions, L-I-O-N apostrophe S, and gave up and searched for Lion, and that didn't give me anything either. So it's just a straight plural, which I wouldn't have, den of lions, that I wouldn't have expected.
All right.
Yeah, 6:7 to 6:16. So that's the time of Belshazzar. And Belshazzar, his father ruled for 16 years, I think, 15 years, 16 years, 17 years, 15 years, in there somewhere. And Belshazzar was co-regent for most of that time, if not all of it. And then in 539 BC, the Persians conquer Babylon. And Daniel continues, but of course you won't hear any more of Belshazzar. And the Bonnie Dust isn't mentioned in Daniel. It's only Belshazzar. I guess Daniel only interacted with Belshazzar would be my guess.
It seems that his reputation has endured over the 30 years, at least to an extent.
Yes, it would have. I'm sure. Since he had a position in the Nebuchadnezzar's government for all that time, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
For 40 years.
Okay, should I close it here? Or?
Yes, this is sufficient for this evening.